So I worked in Africa for 10 years. I ran a mobile bush clinic. And for 5.5 of those years, I worked in Rwanda after the Rwandan genocide in the refugee camps. I learned many, many things. You know, you learn because there's a need. And when there's a need, you can learn all those things. And the Lord, if you rely on Him, He's right there to teach you. He's right there to teach you. So, after 10 years, we were coming home and we stopped at Kibidula. Kibidula is another institution in so we were living at Riverside Farms in Zambia, and then we moved to Tanzania. And Tanzania is where my son is the director of Kibidula. And it's so we had gone to Kibidula to visit my son and to spend some time with him and help him with some things. And so we were there about 3 months. And then there was this Onzee, this older gentleman who was in our church, and he said, "Mama, please come and visit my village. Please come and visit my village. There is such a need." Well, everywhere you turn in Africa, there is a need. But so we went. We borrowed Jason's truck and we went to Makete. And in Lupalilo, the village of Lupalilo, there, in that area, there was 28,000 AIDS orphans. Almost no parents. Parents had all died. Every morning you'd hear the trumpet. Somebody died. Somebody died almost every day, and sometimes two or three times a day. And it was hard. And so, you know, the old man was wise in that he was showing us a need, because the Lord showed us the need, and then we went home and we prayed about that. And then the Lord opened the door for us to be able to do something out there. And so this is a little slide program, not from the beginning, but from the, a little later on, after we got established there. And so these four buildings in a row, this was the, we started by building the chapel, which is the white building there. And then we built my home over there. And then we built the girls' dorm and the staff home. And so we started off simply by, oh yes. Okay, thank you. So we started off by just renting buildings and living in rented buildings and everything else. So, you know, you go into a village and what do? You have no place to live. You don't know anybody. You don't even know the language. And so you rent a house. And then you get some workers and you find somebody who can be your translator. And so pretty soon you're in business because you can translate. And then so started off by getting clothes and stuff for the students. But for the students in the elementary schools and just helping families, because everybody was so, so poor. So this is another staff home and the boys' dormitory. And so these are just buildings. But buildings are only a means to the end. And the end was to be able to house and educate these young people so that they could have something to do with their lives. They had nothing. Young kids, when they graduated from grade 7, usually ran away to the big cities, and because there was nothing but the hoe in the villages. And so they had hoed all their life. And so they wanted something different. And so they'd go out. The girls would go out. They'd come back pregnant. The boys would go out. They'd come back with AIDS. Life was not pleasant for them. This is our mechanic and carpentry shop, and we cut all our own wood off our property. We had a 4-classroom block back there, and this is our cafeteria. This was our campus chapel. Turned out very nice, beautiful. And Eden Valley had all these leftover pews sitting around in storage all over the place. And, you know, now that has pews. I'm not sure how clean they are, but they're there. And so my granddaughters and family came every now and then and did mission trips, and it's good experience for young people to come and see what's going on. And it was, you know, I have found, they have written me little letters saying, Mamère, that means grandmother in French, Mamère, you know that you have been such an example to us, and we want to follow in your steps. All my grandchildren are in the Lord. All my children are in the Lord. All my grandchildren are in the Lord. And so it's who you know that makes a difference, makes a difference. And, yes, it's the Lord that you must know that will make a difference in your life. And so this is my one of my grandchildren with one of my Bible workers, and this is in the evening, and we're doing a little seminar outside and in front of the village. And yeah, the kids got a chance to share, and the people came, and our students helped. And this was the little village of Mago, and these are the government buildings and the bar. You always have the bar to contend with. And so we were able to preach and teach with them. Our students learn in our school, learn to do health expos, and they were so excited, because they were actually teaching the teachers of the elementary school. And all of my students almost had failed grade 7. And we took those students, these are our girls, by the way, for our sewing school. They took, these young people were so excited because they had opportunity to share to people who had no respect for them because they were never able to graduate from grade 7. If you miss grade 7, you were finished school. And so my kids were finished school, most of them. So these were our sewing girls in our sewing class, and they learned to sew and tailor, and so that they could have, you know, and if they stayed 2 years, they got a sewing machine. And then they could go out and start their own business. And then these are our boys, and they're in front of the boys' dorm, and, well, that's a latrine, but there's the teacher's home right beside them as well. And so in our carpentry class, they learn to make stools and chairs and tables, and they made all the doors and window for our buildings. No, not all. I bought some. But as they learned, they got better and better. And hard workers, let me tell you, I want to go back here. Look at this. That's a stone. That's a stone. These kids are tough. And these are our fundis, he's one of our builders. We always had 12 builders, and then he was our carpentry teacher. And so it was a work-study program. So they got to learn how to build as well as do other things, as well as carpentry. And the girls, so we got all this gravel and had to be brought to the work site if it couldn't be dumped there. But we had, and then our workers helped working with the fundis, helping carry bricks and cement. And I had this little 2.5-ton truck, and we would buy burnt bricks in the village. So this is unburnt bricks. These are how they burn their bricks with the fire holes for the fire in there. The outside, these are half burnt bricks. And then all the bricks inside are good. Lots of times on the outside, it's just all covered with mud. And they are mud bricks. And so, but when they're burnt, they're hard. And so the students, we'd go and we'd get bricks and bring them back and build new buildings all the time. And so, yeah. And, you know, they'd work hard because we'd do truckload after truckload after truckload all day long. And pretty soon you'd hear, Mandazi, Mandazi. And Mandazi means, I want some fat cakes. We're hungry. Oh, you're hungry? Okay, well, let's see if the Duca, the little store, which is about this big on the platform here, makes and sells. And so it's just deep-fried bread dough. It's delicious, by the way. And they sweeten the dough a little bit. And so if they had three of those, they were full because they were big like this, and they loved it. And or sometimes you'd hear rice. So they only got rice once a week in our cafeteria. They got cornmeal, and so which is what everybody eats. And then on Sabbath they had rice as well. And so sometimes I'd go buy a bucket of rice for them so that they could have an extra good meal. So, gravel. So, when our first buildings, we bought gravel. Very hard to find, very hard to get, and very expensive. And so, I have these two guys that when I would come home, I spent 7 months there and five months here every year. And when I would go back, they would have this much gravel made. They got paid by the load. Each pile has 40 debes or 45-gallon buckets of gravel in it, all made by hand. With a hammer. They have to dig the rock and then make the gravel. So it's hard. This is Bible class, our cafeteria inside. So like I said, they eat ugali. Ugali every day is a thick cornmeal gruel made with corn flour and thick And until when they're with their paddle, looks like an oar, they can just come like this through it. And it's so thick, they can take it with their fingers and make a little ball, put a dent in it, and then they kind of fill that with beans or greens, and that's their diet. Beans, maize, and greens. So they had taken over the Fundi's kitchen, and so we had to make them their own kitchen. And here they are outside having class, sometimes on nice days, you know. And then always we had baptisms. Every year we had many who got baptized. And it would happen in small groups like this. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. 9 being baptized there, and that could happen 2 or 3 times a year. It was such a blessing because that's what we're there for, right? To bring them to Jesus. And so we had this beautiful river on our property, which gave us a hydroelectric power plant, and we were able to tap in, get lights for our whole campus and everything else. This is just people. So after 9 years, everybody had toilets in their house. After 9 years, I said, okay, it's my turn. And so putting in the toilet in my house, finally. And so people had needs, medical needs, dental needs. Pulled thousands of teeth, delivered lots of babies, and more in Zambia than Tanzania, but nevertheless delivered babies in the huts, on the trails, wherever. The Lord blessed. This is my little dental clinic. I even had a little dental clinic because it was used all the time, and somehow they always came at lunchtime. So we did wound care as well. The kids, you know, these kids always came, but the parents never came. You never seen the parents unless the parents had toothaches or something like that. So you can see this boy's leg was burnt. He had epileptic seizures, and it's really hard for them because they live by the fire, they eat by the fire, they cook by the fire. They sleep by the fire. They do everything by the fire. And an epileptic, there's that movement in the fire of the flame, and it gives them a seizure. So I don't know how he got burnt on his legs. I don't know if you can see right there. His big toe is gone. It burnt off. And there was only the bones sticking out. And I said, Lord, what am I going to do? I don't know what to do. I really need your help, Lord, because I don't know what to do. And, you know, I use bag balm for, they come in these, utter balm, it comes in these green tubs, you know. We use it for hands, kind of Vaseline-y, greasy. And so you put that on a burn, and it cleans it up, just debris, all this rotting flesh and everything else, and it cleans it up so nice. And so he was so dirty and rotting there that I had to put it on twice in order for it to do the job. And when I went over his toe area the second time, the bone came off in my hand. I said, praise the Lord. This is a real answer to prayer, that because I didn't know what to do at all. And so anyway, you can see his other hand is like this. He had fallen into the fire another time, and from here to here, I wasn't there. He was fused together from no bandaging, no care. And so, and actually, his name is Decima. And Decima, around 14, 15, was down below the school. They had a place where they made brick. You always need water to make brick. There was a little pond there. And the water does this. He had a seizure, and he fell in the water. Nobody else was around. So that was the end of Decima. This is caused by fleas. Not any flea. You know, when I first went there, I was so flea bitten, but not this kind of flea, the regular kind of fleas. I couldn't hardly stand it everywhere. And I even had a flea collar on my ankle and on my wrist, but it didn't do anything. And so I was sleeping on a mat on the floor, and it was just freezing. And so I wore more and more clothes, and more clothes just made it comfortable for those fleas, I think, because I was in trouble with fleas. But this is a funza flea. And a funza digs into your skin, makes a egg sac, and so as these eggs grow, the sac grows inside your skin, and pretty soon they hatch, they go back in, they go deeper and deeper and make these little sacs everywhere, and then pretty soon your fingers and toes are separating because there's so many fleas in there. No, that's not it. And so it's a job. So painful. If I got a funza flea bite on my foot at night, it would wake me up itching and paining. If you scratch it, it was painful. And so I'd get my little flashlight and my pin and start digging right away because I didn't want it to go in, because it's much more painful to get out the deeper they are. And you can see the holes. See the holes, the holes, the holes. Holes, all 1, 2, 3, 4. And then so many holes. You know, this is a funza that hasn't been two right there that haven't been taken out yet. And then here, 2 or 3. And then I haven't even touched the back fingers. It was just, these kids are deformed. And sometimes you see old people with shorter fingers and people who can't walk anymore because it's so destructive. Here it is on the toes. Yeah, and we hadn't opened those up yet. So when we do a kit, it's so painful. They are screaming. The village people come by and they say, "Oh, funza." And they walk away. Yeah. And so this was an old lady. Her skin was rotting on the bottom of her feet, was turning black like her toes here. And it would all come off in layers and layers. And it was getting deeper and deeper, and she couldn't walk anymore. And so she called us and asked us if we'd go over and see if we could help her. And sure enough, we were able to stop it. And this is a little kid. Now, kids have to do work over there. They have machetes. They go get firewood. They cut the firewood. Well, this kid missed. They don't have shoes. So between her toes. It was terrible. Anyway, it wasn't so bad, but it just hurts, you know? And you can say, "Oh,
couldn't do that. I couldn't do that. Okay, then you can do nothing and walk away? No, you can't. That's even worse than trying and failing. You know, so you do whatever you can do. So, kids, we have hundreds and hundreds and thousands of kids in these villages. And so once a year, we would give this every school in our, about 7 or 8 schools in our area, and the kids would walk for sometimes 4 hours to come and get some clothes. And we, here they are, they're singing to us and clapping to themselves. And they can sing, let me tell you. They can really sing nicely. And then they get their bundles of clothes. So our sewing school would sew hundreds of dresses. I'd buy big wads of material, bolts, and our sewing school would sew, and they would sew in. I had 5 different sizes of dresses, and so each girl would get a dress, because though we bought bales of clothes, and it comes 100 pounds of clothes, getting clothes from America is not very good. It's mini skirts, tutus, all kinds of little things, but not good for the mission field. Not good for a third world country. So our students would help us give out clothing as well, and they were very happy. And you'd see some really sad sights when you'd see some terrible wounds and sores and scars on these kids when they came. And so sometimes we went to the schools, and sometimes, so can you imagine bringing enough clothing for this many kids? So we have barrels and barrels and truckloads. And we go there, we put it all in a room, we have it all kind of sorted, and then we start divvying out the clothes. You know, they need clothes. This is here at Eden Valley. This is my son, Jason, and Frank, and they're loading the church pews and into our container that's being shipped, and we had that in the front of our container, which was very nice. And when the container got to the other end, we had to unload it and put everything on the ground, and then we'd chain the container to a tree, and the truck would drive out, container would drop, and then we'd muscle it into wherever we wanted it. These are our fundis. And when we had 3 of them, we built a nice roof over it. And then we made garage bays. So we had 3 bays. And then I built my clinic on the end, which was helpful. This is in my house. My house was not the first building to get finished. It was kind of the last. Because you do for others before you do for yourself. And so I was building a couch. And then so maybe some of you know Denise. She spent 3 years with me. We kind of look the same, don't we? And we have our little helper there helping us make a little bookcase that's going to go in our couch. And so this is our couch when it was done. So those bookcases will one was going to go in there and one was going to go in on this end. And then those opened up. We could put stuff in there if we needed to store stuff or hide stuff or whatever. And we had wood stove, a cook wood stove, and that's what heated our house and cooked our food. It was wonderful. I just love cook wood stove. So we tried to, during the, we have a rainy season, so we tried our best to make it so that we were not always in the mud. And the mud over there would stick on your shoes and it build up and build up and you got taller and taller until you found something to knock it off on. And so we had camp meeting at our place too. So this section here was built for storing our lumber so it could dry, because we cut our own lumber for our carpet. Because you can see, we have our own trees. And then under here was a garage mechanic pit. And so then we have student missionaries. Sometimes when they're young, after a week of painting straight, they get very tired. But they persevere, and then you do something fun with them, and then they're okay again. They can paint some more. And here is another one. See, this little guy just walks over to our house and shows us his wounds, and we take care of them. No parents needed. This one, my grandson was with me, and we were at the little Duca, and he said, Mamere, you got to come and see this. I said, what? He says, there's a little boy over there with this thing on his neck, and it's just so awful. You need to help him. I said, okay, let's go find him. So we went and found him, and we brought him home. And after 2.5 days, I got this phone call from his dad, and he said, is my son there? And I said, yes, he is, through a translator. Yes, he is. He's been here, and we're helping him with his neck. And he says, oh, I thought so. And that was it. And so he didn't say, come home, or I'll come and get him, or anything. He just, so this was so abscessed. I put hot compresses on there, and then after a while just pressed on it, and it just ran out green out of there, just so much. And so we were working with him every day and trying to clean this up and get it healed. And then first thing we know, it's time for me to come home. And so I came home twice a year, once for 2 months and once for 3 months, or once for 1 month and once for 4 months. I don't remember anymore. I'm getting old. And so I got him antibiotics. I made arrangements with the clinic that they would keep this clean and keep it covered, because, you know, there's flies out there. And so, and I went to the mother with his pills, and I gave her strict instructions. Every day you do this. Sure. When I came back, he was in the same shape that he was at this point. So sad. So, you know, sometimes you get tired of work and you need a little weekend retreat. And so there's Matema Beach over there on Lake Nyasa. And so we would go. So we went. My son says, hey, Mom, we can go, but we can't go and just lay on the beach. We can go if we work. And we need to build two one day churches out there, and if you guys are willing, we'll make it a trip. I said, we are willing. So this is my granddaughter who lives in Washington, and this is Emily who lives in Africa, and this is Caleb who lives in Canada. And so everybody had a part. We made sure everybody had a part that they could do. And so even these little guys, they all had to pull their weight because they were paying for their holiday. And so, and this is what a one-day church looks like. It's simply the studs. It's the roof the people can't afford. They can make mud bricks. And this is in a hot area, so they only made their walls this high all the way around and didn't go all the way up to the ceiling. And so, therefore, the air can just go right through, which is very nice. So we had to do two. This is our first crew. So this is my daughter-in-law, Antoinette, Denise, myself, my granddaughter. I don't know who that is. I think she comes from Kibidula, and then my little grands. And then here are, some of these are fundis and some are not. And they did all the ground stakes and stuff like that with my son. And then this is the second church that we did. So during the day, we'd get up really early in the morning, drive out to the site, get this thing done. And so we did one every day, and they, when their crews go, the crews from Kibidula do this, they've made, built thousands of churches in all in different countries around Tanzania and throughout Tanzania. And so they can build four of these in a day if they're not too far away. But we built one, and then we could go back to the beach. And so that was fantastic. So what is this all about? This is all about village life and kids and helping kids. And, you know, life is tough. Bare minimum. You sleep on the ground. You eat on the ground. You do everything on the ground. And, you know, I went too fast. These kids, you would think, oh, poor kids. But, you know, they're happy kids. They can find a bottle on the ground and make a car out of it, and an old flip-flop, and make the wheels from it. And they can have a steering wheel up here with wire and be able to turn those wheels. They're creative in their little toys and everything else. So you see, there's a young girl with a baby, a young girl with a baby. It's very, very common for the young girls to be looking after the little ones, and much younger than this. And yeah, it's amazing. And so we had started a nursery school. And in our nursery school, we had some people. We had a young girl who came and wanted to work with orphans. And so we didn't have an orphanage per se, but we had a nursery school. And so we put her in charge of the nursery school. And, you know, she come out of school and everything else, and she was doing good, but, you know, it was hard. And then we got another older lady who came. Actually, my daughter Julie's mother-in-law came, and we put her in a nursery school. And, you know, they said, oh, these kids are so dirty, so stinky, so snotty. They're just so dirty, I can hardly handle it. I says, okay, it's time for you guys to go home. They just looked at me, and I said, yeah. I said, if you can't love these kids the way they are,
then we don't need you. Whoa. I said, you're not going to get AIDS from these little kids if their pajamas or whatever clothes they got on is wet from pee. You're not going to. I said, and you've had babies, and your babies have peed on your lap before. And I said, it's not the end of the world. And have some tissue. Grab a roll of toilet paper and have it there so you can wipe their noses, because they are always, almost always snotty. But if you're here to help, you're here to help. You can't change those things. And you have to take the good with the bad. And so, yes, this is all about helping people and being willing to help. And you know, He gives us the willingness, the endurance, the skills, everything. He's willing. This is on-the-job training, and He's willing to do that for us. And then, you know, there was always this song in my head. I don't know the whole song, but it's, who am I that His love should be shown so free? Who am I that a king holds His hand out to me? And the Lord saw my need, and He heard my great plea, and He held out His hand to me. So, I had never pulled teeth before. I had never delivered babies before. I had never seen wounds like that before. I had never seen funzas and all those things. I never slept, unless I really willingly wanted to sleep on the floor. But I never had to do those things. And, you know, it's the Lord gives you the strength to go through and to do it all. And like I said before, you'd be doing worse if you just walked away and did nothing. And so I praise the Lord for His instructions in my life and caring for me. We're all preachers and teachers in our own right. I'm not one who can get up and quote Bible verses or anything like that, but I can help people, and through helping people, I can help them to know that Jesus was there for the people, and He helped the people, and He first ministered to their needs, and then He preached to them. And so, thank you very much.